Butler is smart. We can't manufacture evidence out of thin air. I'm going to find the evidence. She tossed the throw onto the chair and went to the closet, where she jerked her coat from a hanger and shrugged into it. He followed her. Don't do anything stupid. I don't want Waterman to make you a target of his anger when there's likely no connection at all. Tears hung on her lashes, and she kept yanking on the door before she paused long enough to unlock it. I can't stand by and do nothing. Grasping her shoulders, he pulled her around to face him. I haven't been doing nothing. I asked the detective to find out what's going on with Dixon. Morgan seemed intrigued when he realized Dixon hadn't called in quite a while. He'll let me know in a couple of days, and he's checking to see if there's any connection to the Rogerson murder. She leaned her forehead against his chest. Ignore me. I'm just tired tonight, and I'm running out of savings and will have to go back to work soon. I was sure I'd be able to track down Renee's killer myself, and I'm worried this psycho will strike again. If it was the same guy. He hugged her before she pulled away. I'll call you when I hear from Detective Morgan. She nodded and slipped out into the howling wind. He stood in the doorway and watched her slide into her red car. The taillights blinked twice, then disappeared in the blowing leaves and dust. Spirit pushed his head against Boone's knee, and he rubbed the dog's head. His own determination about not finding Renee's killer was just as deep as his cousin's. Garrett drove the old pickup slowly through the streets. He curled his lip at the sight of the picturesque town. If he didn't know better, he'd guess he'd entered a time warp and been transported back to the 50s. The storefronts had clearly been built in the 1800s, and most were painted multiple colors. Snow clung to the trees' branches and contrasted with the brightly colored leaves still clinging to them. Pedestrians hurried to their destinations under glowering skies that threatened more snow. A few flakes already drifted in the glare of the street lamps. He kept a lookout for Dana, but there was no sign of her. Where else would she go? The minute she'd left Washington, he knew she'd run back to Chris for help. An empty parallel parking spot was ahead, right in front of a neon open sign in the Copper Club Tavern's window. He was parched and hungry, and this place would do. The bar was nearly empty when he went inside, and Garrett's mouth watered at the yeasty smell of the beer on tap. The bartender glanced up as Garrett slung himself into a corner table. He sat and watched out the window at the town. It would be hard to escape notice here. What did Dana see in this place? Sure, she was born here, but what a little backwater. They could be sitting along the wharf and watching whales right now, instead of gearing up for a snowstorm. Women. There was no understanding them. A young woman stopped at his table. With her raven hair, dark brown eyes, and pale skin, she was quite the looker. She wore a short black skirt and knee-high boots. Her red top didn't leave much to the imagination. She smiled down at him. Hi, honey, what will it be? The cook has his special pasties coming out of the oven. What's a pasty? He had a vague idea what they were because Dana had tried to make them a time or two, but he wanted to keep this pretty young thing around a bit. There was no mistaking the admiration in her glance as she took in his bulging biceps. White teeth flashed in a seductive smile. Honey, you're not from around here, eh? It's a meat pie usually stuffed with beef, onion, potatoes, and rutabaga. It's a dish you won't find much of anywhere in the States except up here in the U.P. It will put hair on your chest. She leaned close enough for him to catch a whiff of the mint on her breath. Not that you'd need that. Give it a try. Since Dana was being so skittish, he might relieve his stress with this bit of fluff. He gave her a smile. You talked me into it. What time you get off, beautiful? Midnight. But if the storm comes in, we might close early. Her full lips curved up. Where are you staying? Nowhere yet. Any hotels around? You pass the only one on the way in, out where Houghton Street starts. He nodded. I saw a no vacancy sign. Any other towns close by? Ontonagon is about 20 minutes south, and Houghton is on up north about half an hour. She chewed her lip a moment. I got room, though, if you don't mind the sofa. I don't mind. He He added another lazy smile to his comment. No way would he be sleeping on the sofa. She was ripe for the picking. Let me get you fed, and I'll see how the evening goes. Smitty might let me off early. I think the weather is going to kill any business.
Sounds good.
He settled in for a leisurely evening of flirting with the server, whose name he still didn't know, and figuring out this little town. A few customers came in, and their broad, Uper accent made him smirk. Dana had an accent like that once, but she lost it. He planned to make sure she was gone long before it came back. He had even tried calling Chris, but the jerk hung up on him. Garrett drummed his fingers on the table, then decided to call his grandpa. The old man got lonely in the nursing home, and Garrett tried to call a couple times a week.
Hey, Gramps, how's it going?
I thought you'd call today. Wish you were here, boy. I won the chess championship. Got a trophy and everything.
His grandpa's quavery voice strengthened as he talked. Great going, Gramps. I'll be in Washington in a few weeks, so I'll stop by. See if someone will text me a picture of you with the trophy.
Already thought of it.
Garrett's text message alert dinged, and he glanced at the picture. His grandpa wore a chambray shirt and baggy jeans. The trophy was a small, cheap one, but there was no missing the old man's pride as he held it up.
I just got it. Congratulations. Has Mom been by to see you?
She was here over the weekend.
That's good. Garrett wasn't on speaking terms with his mother, but at least she put the booze down long enough to check on her dad once in a while. He chatted a few more minutes with his grandfather, who'd helped raise him, until he heard the fatigue in his voice.
Love you, Gramps. Gotta go.
The warm feelings ebbed as he sat in the bar by himself. He shouldn't be alone. Dana should be here. Its light still on, the library sat across the street, and he watched a few hardy folks enter and exit before the lights finally winked out at 9. A street light illuminated a familiar face, and he bit back an expletive. He'd seen dozens of pictures of her and Dana. Bree Matthews, a kid on each side of her and one trailing behind, walked toward a Jeep parked almost directly across from his truck. His gaze swept back to the library entry. No sign of Dana. Maybe she was waiting in Bree's vehicle. He waited until Bree opened the driver's door and the interior light switched on. It was empty. Would she recognize him if he walked out and confronted her? This was all Bree's fault. If she hadn't coaxed Dana away, life would be perfect. Through slitted eyes, he watched her buckle in the younger kids, then climb under the wheel. She took out her cell phone and made a call while the engine idled. Her husband, maybe. Or was she calling Dana? Had she recognized him? He turned his face away from the plate glass window and took a sip of his beer. Maybe he should get out of here. For all he knew, she'd call the sheriff, who was already on the way to arrest him. He rose and tossed some bills on the table. The server rushed to intercept him.
I just got the okay to leave.
Her voice was breathless. I'm parked around back. That's your truck out front?
Sure is.
I'm in a blue Chevy Blazer. I'll pull around and flash the lights. You can follow me home.
Honey, I'd follow you anywhere.
He grabbed his coat and slipped it on.
The name's Tracy, Tracy Pitt, just in case you want to know.
He grinned.
Jarrett Mannon.
No sense in giving her his real name. He had to go to his job for a few days, but she would be a nice diversion while he figured out what to do about Dana. She sent a smile up his way, then rushed for the kitchen. When he checked before stepping outside, Bree's Jeep was gone. He darted to his truck and hopped inside. The snow was light and dry, easily removed by the wipers. In a few minutes, Tracy's car paused beside his truck, and she waved at him. He waved back and followed her down the street toward a light winking in the distance. He reached under his seat to make sure his gun was still there. Its cold surface reassured him. Chapter 6. A dirty bulb pushed away the shadows from the third floor. Dana stood at the top of the stairs with her hands on her hips and surveyed the space. The ceiling rose 10 feet, then angled down, giving it a cozy feel, in spite of the dirty beige walls and dusty wooden floors. She'd expected to find the top floor crammed with old furniture and boxes, but the few items here had been pushed against the walls. Light filtered through the dirty windows from cars and street lamps, but there wasn't enough illumination to clearly make out much beyond the size. Phantom left her side and went to nose around the room's perimeter. Dana felt along the wall for a switch. When she flipped it on, one light bulb from a bank of three in the ceiling came on.
With a little paint, this would make an awesome living room area for me, she told Phantom, who didn't look up from his sniffing of a cedar chest under one window. What do you have there, boy?
She'd seen the chest before in her parents' room. It had been her grandmother's, and her mom often waxed it lovingly.
I thought this old chest burned up in the fire.
Kneeling beside her dog, she ran her fingers over the wood. Her pulse sped up as memories flooded over her, visions of her life before everything turned upside down when she was 8. Mom used to keep mementos in this, things like old report cards, picture albums, and the family Bible. A padlock prevented her from lifting the lid, and she made a mental note to ask Chris for a key. What if the many things she thought were lost in the fire still existed? Chris should have told her. He'd always been protective of her, though. Maybe because he tried to live up to the role of a big brother, even though they weren't blood relatives. After her real parents and brother had died in the boating accident, her aunt and uncle adopted her. Chris was her uncle's stepson, but he had always been there for her. Maybe he'd thought seeing this would hurt. And maybe it would have a few years ago, but the pain of losing her parents had faded enough over the 20 years since they'd died that she could handle it now. She struggled with the lock a bit, then gave up. It wouldn't budge without a key. As she rose, she heard a squeak as if someone was coming up the steps. Could Garrett have found her already? There. It came again. Her chest squeezed, and she looked around for her purse, then remembered she'd left it in the kitchen. Without her fingers around the reassuring barrel of a can of bear spray, she felt helpless and exposed. Phantom trotted toward the door with his tail wagging, and a bit of her trepidation lifted. The dog hated Garrett.
Who's there?
Hey, Phantom.
A familiar male voice echoed up the steps. Relief nearly made her lightheaded.
Chris, what are you doing here? I didn't think you were due back from your trip for another week.
Her brother came into view. His blonde hair was in need of a trim, and a swath of it lay on his forehead. He wore a crisp gray suit and white shirt. His blue eyes lit when he saw her. He held out his arms, and she ran to hug him. She buried her nose in his jacket's rough texture and inhaled the scent of cold and wool.
You scared the fire out of me. I heard your footsteps on the stairs and thought Garrett had found me.
Chris released her and his smile vanished.
Garrett called me today. I told him to take a hike. I can't believe how he's treated you. I hate to say I told you so. I never wanted you to leave and go to a big city. It's not safe, but you'll be safe here.
Chris and Garrett had been bunkmates when they both joined the Marines right out of high school. Though they had come from different parts of the country, they became best friends immediately. Chris had gotten out after 6 years to work as a college recruiter, and Garrett had gotten out right after that. Chris had been livid when she moved to Washington to be with Garrett a year ago. He had been right all along. It was good to see her older brother again. Since their parents died in a house fire 5 years ago and she left Rock Harbor, they'd spent 3 Christmases and a week one summer together. It wasn't enough. She gave him another hug, then released him.
What did he say? Does he know I'm with you?
Her hands shook as she tucked a loose strand of hair back into place on top of her head.
I didn't tell him, if that's what you mean. But yeah, he suspects. I mean, why wouldn't he assume you'd run back to your hometown? It makes sense, and he's not stupid. I told him not to try to find you, and if he hurt you again, I'd kill him.
You don't think he'll come here?
Chris hesitated before he shook his head. She studied his expression.
What aren't you telling me?
He loosened his tie with a blue stripe.
I heard some background noise that sounded like a waitress.
She said, "Here's your beef pasty, love." Dana reached out to touch Phantom's head and took a calming breath.
So, he must be in the UP.
Up here in Upper Country was about the only place she knew where pasties were commonly sold.
Maybe.
His smile came back. But hey, I'm home until Sunday. I'll be on the lookout for him. He glanced around.
What do you think of your room?
It's gorgeous, Chris. The touches you had for me on the second floor made me feel right at home. I can't wait to dig in with paint.
Good. It's your home forever if you want it. I have plenty of room, and I'm not here enough for us to get in each other's way.
She pointed to the cedar chest. I didn't know that survived the fire. It was my real mom's. The smile seeped from his eyes.
I didn't want to make you sad.
I'm okay now. I'd love to see what's left. Could I get the key?
I don't have it. I never had the heart to look through it myself. There's a box of stuff in the basement I saved from the fire. It might be in there. We could look.
He gave a mighty yawn.
I'm starved. Is there anything in the house to eat?
Boone brought some food by, and I got a few groceries. She went toward the stairs. I'll fix you some dinner. Her loneliness and fear were gone with her brother here. Chris would make sure everything turned out all right. He always did. Sitting in the kitchen with Chris was like old times. She watched him as he wolfed down a sandwich. He'd taken off his jacket and rolled up the sleeves of his white shirt. They'd often spent evenings like this together, and she was so blessed to have him to herself again. He was incredibly good-looking and such a kind man as well. He lifted a brow her direction.
Why are you looking at me like that?
She couldn't hold back a small giggle. Just wondering how you've managed to escape the clutches of a wife. You're everything a woman would want. He grinned,
spoken like a loving sister.
Rising, he carried his plate to the sink, rinsed it, then placed it in the dishwasher.
Way to avoid the question.
She stretched and yawned. My furniture is supposed to get here on Monday. That space on the third floor is fabulous, too.
I might take that for a living room area, if you don't care. I told you that you can have both floors. I have everything I need down here. It's really too big a house for me. But Dad always talked about how it would be a great building to restore and turn into a home. I couldn't resist it when it went to auction.
He nudged her shoulder and grinned.
I'm just glad to have you here. I've missed you.
I've missed you, too. It's good to be home. Things between them had been a bit strained since she'd left to follow Garrett to Washington. If only she'd listened to Chris right from the beginning. He held out his hand to help her up.
Want to look for that key in the basement?
Though she was feeling a little lazy, his suggestion perked her up.
You bet. I'm warning you that there are likely spiders down there. I've never gotten around to cleaning out the place. Things are stored down there from when this was a hotel.
She suppressed a shudder. My brave knight of a brother can bring the fly swatter.
You can go first.
He grinned and went to the pantry for the fly swatter and a broom, then led her to the basement door on the pantry's other side.
Let me sweep the cobwebs out of the way first.
Brandishing the broom, he brushed down the ceiling as he descended the stairs.
All clear,
he called up to her. She sneezed at the basement's musty odor and kept an eye out for creepy crawlies as she joined Chris at the bottom of the steps. The single bulb overhead cast a sickly light over the space. One room branched off to the right and another to the left. The limestone walls told her the building was old, and the heavy shelves lining the walls were equally old and filled with ancient items like bent and rusting flatware, old linens thick with mildew, broken Christmas tree ornaments, cans of rusty paint, old shoes, and several old paintings. She blew the dust off a watercolor of a Paris scene.
This is pretty. I might put it in my room. It's all yours.
Chris's shoes crunched on grit as he walked off to her right.
I think that stuff I told you about is over here under the stairs.
He stopped to click on another light, and the back area grew brighter. This area looked more likely to contain spiders, so she gingerly followed him.
Keep that fly swatter handy, Sir Chris.
His low chuckle rumbled.
Here it is.
His broad back obscured her view, but the scrape of something on the floor told her he was pulling it out and checking for nasty creatures. She caught a glimpse of a large cardboard box, the kind copier paper came in. He scooted it around under the light and brushed it off with a broom, then lifted the lid and set it aside on the floor.
Have at it, kiddo.
The scent of smoke still clung to the contents, and she could hardly force herself to dig into them.
Who packed this stuff?
Jane Cork. She said she threw in things she thought we might want someday.
Jane was their mother's best friend. She lived next door with her husband who owned a marina. The box contained a jumble of things. Dana spied an old Bible, 2 passports, a best teacher trophy with her uncle's name on it, several books that might be journals, and a mishmash of old jewelry in the bottom. She sorted through the jewelry. Here's the key. She lifted it in triumph. I think I might like to take the Bible and journals to my room, if that's okay.
Better off with you than stuck in this old damp basement.
She tucked the items under her arm. Let's go check out the chest.
Chris put the lid back on the box and slid it into its hiding space under the stairs. Lead the way.
It was like a treasure hunt, an exploration into their past. Did he feel the excitement of it the way she did? She shot him a glance, and his blue eyes held an intent expression, too. It was like reconnecting with their former selves. The third floor held a glimmer of light from the moon outside. She flipped on the lights and went straight to the chest. I hope this fits it. She inserted the key and turned it until it clicked. It's open. She struggled to open the lid, so she stepped back and let Chris lift it. Kneeling in front of it, she removed the contents. Old baby pictures of her birth certificate, report cards from her early school years, old baby clothes, and several favorite old toys she'd forgotten about long ago. Chris bent over and picked up a picture of Dana with a little boy and 2 smiling adults. This is from when you were little, before you came to us. A lump formed in her throat as she took the picture and stared at her first family. She wanted to cling to her few memories of that time, but she didn't want Chris to see how much it hurt. It would bother him if he thought he wasn't enough to make up for the loss of her first family. I sometimes forget you're really my cousin and not my brother.
Since our parents made it legal, I'm your brother in all the ways that count.
She placed the items back inside the chest, then shut it. I don't know what I would have done if it hadn't been for you.
Luckily, you'll never have to find out.
Chapter 7. The sun shone out of a crazy blue sky, and the temperature in Lihue was a balmy 80 degrees when Laurie exited the terminal into the open-air baggage claim. The sweet scent of flower leis filled the air. Her spirits immediately soared as she retrieved her luggage, then made her way across the drive to a covered area servicing car rental customers. She got in line behind a man with short brownish-blonde hair who smiled at her. He reminded her a little of Brad Pitt when he was in his early 30s. The appreciative expression in his intensely blue eyes filled her with warmth.
Been to Kauai before?
His voice was deep and masculine.
It's my first time. She shifted her shoulder bag to her other arm. I'm here on business. You?
Here on business, too. I come this way every few weeks.
He stuck out his hand for her to shake.
Peter Lovett. I sell pharmaceuticals, so I hit all the clinics in the Lihue Hospital when I'm here.
Laurie Matthews. I'm auditing the books at a clinic in Poipu. I'll be here for a week. How about you?
He motioned for her to go ahead of him in the line.
I'll be here for a week. You staying down in the Lihue area?
She handed her paperwork to the clerk. I'm in a condo at Prince Kahio.
That's on the South Shore, just across the road from my place. You like to snorkel?
I've never gone, but I'm eager to learn.
The best snorkeling on the island is right across the street at Lawai Beach.
She answered the clerk's questions and took her paperwork. Did she dare flirt with this guy? He seemed much more sophisticated than she was used to, but the fact that he was a little older and settled appealed to her. She loved the way his eyes never left her face and the way he leaned in slightly when talking to her. She moved away from the desk to give him space.
I don't suppose you'd like to teach me how to snorkel.
I'm all yours.
His tone indicated a deeper meaning.
Wait a minute, and we can take the shuttle together.
Her smile widened, and she moved a few feet away and waited in the shade.
The car rental employee greeted him with a "back again" comment.
The air felt different on the island, redolent of flowers and the sea. She already loved it. Peter wore a frown as he joined her.
They don't have a car for me. I can get one tomorrow, but they have nothing today.
I don't suppose I could bum a ride with you to South Shore.
I'll take you to dinner as a thank you. I know all the great places to eat in Kalua and Poipu.
She hesitated just a moment, remembering all the warnings her brother had given her over the years. But this was a businessman, and the employee had clearly recognized him. She was being ridiculous.
Of course you can. She had a hard time keeping her smile from becoming a beacon. I was dreading my first night alone in a new place.
He motioned for her to go ahead of him in the line to board the shuttle.
I suggest we stop on the way and get a few groceries at Big Save. You'll want food for breakfast, at least. Maybe lunch stuff, too, if you tend to pack your lunch.
I'm so glad you know your way around. It'll make it so much easier for me.
15 minutes later, she took possession of a Chrysler convertible and let him drive. He pointed out interesting attractions along the curving road to Kalua. She took pictures of the tree tunnel into town and felt the stress of the long flight drop away. Had anyone ever made her feel as special as Peter did? She couldn't think of a single person, not even her brother, Cade. Peter had an intensity about him that made her feel she was the most beautiful woman in the world. They bought a few groceries at a small store in the tiny town of Kalua, then drove out the winding narrow road to the condo complexes. The ocean across the street was impossibly blue, and the salty aroma of the sea blew into her face on the breeze. Prince Kahio condos were across the road from the ocean, beside a small park. Kahio's shores had balconies right out over the spray of water. He parked in the Prince Kahio lot and opened his door.
Here we are. Where are you?
212. She looked across the street at the surf hitting the rocks. A few snorkelers picked their way down the lava. The sound of the surf carried across the little country road, and she was eager to put her toes in the sand and water. He opened her door.
I'll carry your bags up, then come back and get mine. We might as well leave the top down, since we'll be back down for dinner. Let me see if I can get a reservation at the beach house, so we can watch the sunset. It will be a perfect ending to the best afternoon of my life.
I'm glad I met you, Laurie. I think it's going to be life-changing.
Warmth circled her like a mother's embrace. Did he really feel like that? She watched him pop the trunk and grab her suitcase. She took her carry-on from the tiny back seat and followed him up the concrete stairs to her condo. They found her door, and she got out her key. How did she attract the attention of such a classy, good-looking guy? It was a miracle. After she opened the door, Laurie paused on the threshold. Let's get changed, and we can meet in 15 minutes. He set her suitcase down inside and grinned at her.
You are so special, Laurie. I saw that right from the start.
I can't wait. His voice was low and oh so seductive. Heat ran up her neck and she couldn't say a word. Smiling, she shut the door and grabbed her suitcase. The bite of the cold air stung Bree's cheeks, and she tightened the scarf around her neck. An early snowstorm had dumped 3 inches of snow overnight and brought in enough cold air to freeze the falls. The ice all around her crackled a welcome as they stepped on it. Samson romped to the edge of the waterfall through the fresh snow, then turned to look back at her as if to ask what was taking her so long. Dana and the 3 others on the search seemed to have no trouble keeping up with the dogs. Dana's blue eyes sparkled with excitement as she paused to wait for Bree with the dogs.
Are you sure about this?
Her gaze seemed locked onto the wall of ice. The frozen waterfall's glittering surface rose 8 feet in the air to Bree's left. The river above them plunged down to a frozen shallow pool before continuing to meander toward Lake Superior. The entire river had frozen over 2 weeks ago, but there were no tracks in the area, so Bree was sure they would be the first to climb the ice.
You don't have to go. Ice climbing isn't for everyone. I hid the scent article at the top of the waterfall.
Bree nodded toward the dogs who were milling at the foot of the falls.
What I wanted everyone to experience is what to do if your dogs are clearly showing signs of the scent, but it's in a place inaccessible to them. Do you give up?
Emily, a teenager with soft brown hair, shook her head. She was Naomi's, Bree's best friend's stepdaughter.
You have to at least check it out, right?
If I were out looking for a lost person right now and saw the dogs acting this way, I'd assume the target was nearby, maybe at the top of the waterfall, because of the direction the dogs are looking. Which is why, as a searcher, you always have to be in good shape and prepared for anything. How are we going to get up there?
Dana looked to the top of the frozen waterfall.
Climb the ice?
Exactly.
Bree slipped the backpack off her shoulders and unzipped it. I brought ice climbing gear.
She dumped out crampons, ice axes, and helmets into the snow.
How many of you are familiar with mountain climbing?
When only Dana hesitantly raised her hand, Bree sent the others a reassuring smile.
The rest of you can stay here while Dana and I demonstrate. If we'd been climbing a higher waterfall, I would have brought belay devices and carabiners. But with this short one, we can easily climb it in a few minutes.
She handed crampons to Dana and watched to make sure her friend knew how to attach them to her boots. Once they were attached to her satisfaction, Bree put on her own and handed two ice axes to Dana, then took two herself. They both donned helmets and she led the way to the small waterfall.
We'll use the axes to pull ourselves up. Then the crampons will let us stay stable to move up the sheet of ice. You'll notice as the water froze, it left many ledges and ridges that will make it easy to climb.
I'll watch you climb first, Dana said. It's been ages since I did any ice climbing. I'm pretty rusty.
Sure thing.
Bree shouldered her ready pack and walked to the base of the falls. She hid her axe into the ice above her head, then drove her crampons into the jagged ice and settled both feet before placing the other axe a foot higher than the first one. She climbed closer to the top axe, then removed the bottom one and continued to replicate her technique. It took only 5 minutes to climb the short wall of ice. She looked down to see Dana coming right behind her. The cold wind at the top of the waterfall nearly took her breath away as she watched Dana haul herself up the waterfall. Dana's cheeks were pink from the wind, which had teased strands of brown curls out from under the helmet.
Good job!
Hands on hips, Bree turned to look at the nearby forest of wind-stripped trees.
What should we do now?
She called down to the rest of the searchers.
Our dogs are below and can't lead us directly to whatever they smelled.
Emily cupped her hands around her mouth.
Survey the area yourself. Call out for the missing person.
Right.
Bree raised her voice.
Naomi, where are you?
She'd cajoled Naomi into hiding up here. She waited a few moments.
There's no answer. Do I give up?
No, Dana said. She might be unconscious or unresponsive, so we do a sweep of the area on foot. She took off toward a tight cluster of trees protected by a large rock formation.
This would be a natural place to shelter.
She stepped around the side of the boulder, then stopped short and put her hand to her mouth.
Bree, come quick. Naomi's been injured. There's real blood and she's unconscious.
Bree felt as though she'd been kicked in the chest. Naomi was like a sister to her. Bree broke into a run across the snow and caught her breath as she rounded the boulder formation. Naomi lay on the ground with a red stain pooling below her head. Her thick braid rolled out like a brown rope. A nasty gash gaped on her forehead, and Bree pulled a sterile pad package out of her ready pack and ripped into it. She pressed the pad against the cut.
Do you have a signal here?
Dana checked her phone and nodded.
I'll call for help.
Don't call 911. Call Mason directly and have him send a helicopter up here ASAP. I don't like the way she's breathing. Naomi's chest barely moved with short breaths. Bree checked her pulse, which was thready and uneven.
Naomi, open your eyes.
Through a fog, she heard Dana give the sheriff their coordinates. Dana gasped, and Bree looked up.
What is it?
Dana pointed to a wool scarf caught on an aspen tree branch.
I knitted that for Garrett.
She sprang to her feet and stared into the shadows.
He must have been here. Maybe he attacked Naomi.
Chapter 8. A helicopter? Winded from his hike, Boone exited the trees to see a rescue chopper hovering overhead. A person strapped into a basket dangled from the chopper and slowly rose to the waiting rescue worker. Boone looked around and saw several people clustered at the top of the waterfall, then recognized Bree and Dana. The puffy coats and snow pants they wore made them look like the Pillsbury Doughboy. The whop-whop of the chopper blades nearly deafened him as he went over to see what was going on.
Who's hurt?
The noise overhead made him lean in close to Dana's ear to be heard. "It's Naomi O'Reilly. She's still unconscious and has a head wound that's been bleeding quite a lot. I think Bree got the bleeding mostly stopped."
He fell silent as they watched Naomi being loaded into the helicopter. When the sound of the rotors finally faded, he leaned close again.
"She fell when climbing?"
Dana shook her head. "She was hiding for us to find, but someone attacked her."
He frowned. "Show me."
"This way." Dana led him toward a stand of boulders. Bree followed slowly. Multiple boot prints marred the white snow, and a bloodstain emphasized the area as well. Boot tracks led off into the woods to the east.
"You didn't come that way?"
"No, we climbed the falls." When Dana started to follow the prints, he caught her arm.
"Mason won't want the scene contaminated any more than it already is."
Dana bit her lip and shifted from foot to foot. He followed the direction of her gaze to a bright blue and black scarf hanging from a tree limb.
"That's not yours, a breeze?"
Dana shook her head. "I made it, though. It was a birthday present to Garrett. Chris got home on Friday night and told me Garrett called him. In the background, Chris heard a server mention a beef pasty, so he thought Garrett might be in the area. This makes it clear that he is."
"You think he attacked Naomi? Why?"
"I don't know. Maybe she saw him doing something illegal." Bree pushed down her hood. "Then why didn't he kill her?"
"Maybe you interrupted him. She didn't say anything."
Bree shook her head. "She was unconscious the whole time. I've got to call Donovan." She pulled off her gloves, then dug into the pocket of her down jacket and extracted her cell phone. She walked a few feet away to call Naomi's husband, then turned back to Dana. Her eyes were shadowed.
"This isn't your fault."
"You don't know that." Her voice quivered. "He might have been waiting for me."
"How would he know where you were?"
"I texted Chris to let him know I was on a training session this morning. What if Garrett figured out my cell phone number and is intercepting my texts? He's a whiz at anything to do with electronics. You should see the toys he has."
Dana's voice rose the longer she talked. "He even has some kind of thing that picks up voices from yards and yards away. For all I know, he was outside the house when I talked to Bree on the phone and made plans to come out here."
She had a point. Boone looked back toward the woods and wished he could investigate. Once Mason showed up, he'd tag along and see what he could find out.
"Did you call Chris to see if he's heard anything more from Garrett?"
"He'll just worry, or say I told you so." Dana sighed and reached into her pack for a bottle of water. "Most days, he makes me feel like I'm 12 instead of 28. She didn't look a day over 18 with her pink cheeks and beautiful skin. Boone dragged his gaze away from the intense blue of her eyes.
"A big brother's supposed to act that way."
His voice trembled a bit, and he cleared his throat. When she touched his arm, he looked back at her again. "I'm sorry. Your sister was younger than you too, wasn't she? I never met her, but Allison really loved her.
They were like sisters. I was 2 years older, and it was always my job to take care of her. Allison is taking a look at Garrett. You know anything about his travels?"
The softness vanished from her eyes, and she removed her hand. "Not really. Just that he has a route. I'm sure that's the case with most salesmen. I hope Allison doesn't call him or attract his attention in any way. He's a scary guy, and I'd hate for her to be in his crosshairs."
"You should call Chris and let him know it's likely Garrett is here. He's going to hear about it sooner or later."
"True. But I think I'll wait until I get home. He's probably on a recruitment visit." Her cell phone played Phantom of the Opera, and she unzipped her pocket and stuck her hand inside. "It's my brother. He might have already heard." She tugged off her glove with her teeth, then swiped the screen. "Hey, Chris." Boone didn't consciously try to listen as she turned her back and walked a few feet away, but sound traveled in the cold air. From this end of the conversation, it was clear Chris had heard about the attack on Naomi and thought Garrett was in the area. The sound of voices carried up the slope, and the sheriff and two deputies came their way. With any luck, Garrett would be in custody soon. The heat vent overhead had finally begun to thaw Dana's icy skin. Perched on a chair in the hospital waiting room, she shrugged off her coat and stared up at the television where a news anchor went over the day's events. She didn't hear a word of it as she waited to hear the squeak of the doctor's shoes.
Surely there would be news of Naomi's condition at any moment. Donovan had arrived, and he had gone back to Naomi's ER room with Bree. One of the other canine handlers had taken charge of Phantom for her, but Samson had gone with Bree. Had Garrett attacked Naomi? The worry played over and over in Dana's head. If her arrival here had brought danger to her friends, she didn't think she could deal with it. And if he was here, what should she do? Chris assured her Garrett couldn't harm her here, but being a dispatcher had shown her how a determined stalker could get past any barrier or protection. Her stomach gave a hard squeeze. She'd spent so much time trying to feel safe that she wasn't sure she'd ever truly relax and quit looking over her shoulder. Even if Garrett left, she'd worry he'd come back. Was there such a thing as a true haven? The anticipated squeak of shoes finally came, and she shot to her feet as Bree came through the doorway. A weary line crouched between her green eyes, and she was pale but smiling. Samson pranced behind her with his tail up. Another good sign. The smile gave Dana a bit of hope. She's okay? Bree nodded and tossed her green and black down coat onto the chair. She ran a hand through her red curls. She has a mild concussion, but the hospital is releasing her shortly. Donovan was beside himself until she woke up. Dana exhaled. Oh, thank the good Lord. I was so worried. Bree's smile widened. And she was more worried about us being upset than about having a concussion. Did she say what happened? She steeled herself to hear what Garrett had wanted and everything he had done. She thinks she fell and hit her head on the rock, but it's all a little fuzzy, probably because of the concussion. What about Garrett? Bree shrugged. She claimed she didn't see anyone. Dana frowned and shook her head. Then what was that scarf doing there? Maybe he was in the woods earlier and lost it. Or maybe she's not remembering everything. There were those boot tracks leading off into the woods. Did you hear from Mason at all? Boone was supposed to call me after they were done searching, but I don't have a cell signal in here. Bree picked up her coat. Coverage is spotty here, but I had one bar in Naomi's room, and Mason called. The boot tracks ended at the road, and they didn't find any sign of Garrett. Boone is an expert tracker, and he thinks the tracks were made earlier. Naomi's tracks were layered on top of the bigger prints. The blood rushed to Dana's head. So he didn't try to hurt her. I am so relieved. But Mason found no clues to where he is or what he's doing here. Heavy footsteps pounded toward them on the vinyl tile floor, and a man's bulky form turned into the room. Dana tensed. Had talking about Garrett conjured him up? But she recognized the Arizona Cardinals emblem on the black jacket the man wore. Boone pulled his gloved hands from his pockets. I thought you might still be here when my calls went straight to voicemail. How's Naomi?
Going to be okay. You didn't find Garrett?
Maybe he'd come to let her know Garrett was in custody. Droplets of melted snow clung to his dark hair and glistened in the overhead light when he shook his head.
Sorry. You came with Bree, so I thought maybe you needed a ride home.
Dana glanced at Bree, who nodded and said, I'll be here a while longer, and I thought I'd run past Naomi's house and reassure the kids. Emily is taking care of things, but I know she's worried. I'm going to grab pizza and take the kids over to keep them occupied. Dana slipped her coat on. I'll head on home then. Let me know if you hear anything else.
I will.
Dana walked with Boone through the hospital halls filled with dinner trays, spilling out the aroma of roast beef that vied with the smell of antiseptic. Her stomach complained again, and she realized she hadn't eaten since breakfast. Boone glanced at her as they reached the front doors.
Want to stop and grab something at the Swami Cafe? The weekly smorgasbord is being served tonight.
She hadn't had their smoked salmon and Lapland cheese bread in years, and her mouth watered at the thought of the Monday night spread at the cafe. Chris was working again, so no one was home waiting on her. She zipped her coat tighter against the wind as they stepped outside.
That sounds great. We might as well walk. It's only a block and a half. Tough woman, here you roar. Most people don't want to walk in this wind.
She put on her earmuffs. It feels good to me after the constant rain in Washington. I'm enjoying the thought of winter, even with all the snow coming. You probably hate winter, don't you? He fell into step beside her.
Nope, I like winter sports. Even when I lived in Arizona, I lived up in the Mogollon Rim area where we get snow.
Zane Grey Country. I've read every one of his books. My favorite was The UP Trail.
He stopped and grabbed her arm.
I don't think I've talked to another person who has read that one. It's not one most people think about when they hear his name.
I think it's the best Western ever written.
He took her hand and guided it into the crook of his elbow. I think we're going to be friends now.
A warm sensation started in her belly and spread to her chest as she stared up into his hazel eyes.
I thought we already were.
She cleared her throat. How'd you end up here?
My aunt and uncle were here. And Allison. After my injury, I wanted to get away. Do something new.
His voice went flat.
I bought some land from my uncle, then built my cabins. It was a good move. I love it.
What do you love most about it? Before he could respond, a horn blared into the cold air. A four-wheel drive truck, blue and rusty, roared by. Garrett stuck his hand out the window in a rude gesture before the pickup careened around a corner in a belch of smoke. Dana gaped after the old truck.
He's found me.
She fumbled for her phone.
I'd better call the sheriff.
Chapter 9. The bustle of the cafe was a warm hubbub of welcome around them, with people stopping at their back booth to wish Dana well in her new job and to ask them about Naomi. Boone shielded her as much as he could, answering when she went glassy-eyed at the questions. Molly seemed to understand they needed some quiet, and she began to stand guard a few feet away.
Here, try some cheese bread. It will calm down those shakes.
Boone lifted a still warm piece of cheese to her lips. Known to Finns as Lipajuisto, it was a mild cheese that had been fried or baked in a pie tin and cut into wedges, then topped with lingonberry jam. No true Rock Harbor native could resist it. She turned her head.
I don't think I can eat.
She peered past his shoulder at the dark street illuminated by a lone street lamp. How could he get away so completely? It had been an hour since they had seen Garrett, and they'd only come inside the cafe when Mason reported no sign of the old Ford pickup. He's probably got a hiding place nearby. He'll turn up. Mason and his deputies will keep watch.
That won't do much good.
She stared at the plate of food in front of her, then pushed it away with an expression of distaste.
You need to eat. Starving yourself would just make you too weak to fight when he comes after you. You need to gain about 20 pounds so you can beat him.
Her jaw dropped, then her lips turned up.
Nice try, but you're terrible at jokes.
He pushed the plate back toward her.
Admit it, it was funny.
Maybe a little.
The smile lifted a bit more, and she speared a piece of smoked salmon with her fork, then ate it.
Mmm, they have the best salmon here.
She took a tin of sea salt from her purse and sprinkled a bit on her meal, then picked up a piece of cheese bread and waved it his direction.
The truth is, you're right. He's going to come after me, and I'd better be ready.
Hey, I didn't really mean that. The entire town is on the lookout for him. Mason will get him.
Do you know how many times I've heard that kind of thing in my line of work? It would take both hands to count the number of women I've talked to on dispatch who were trying to get away from an ex-husband or boyfriend who has broken a restraining order. She probably had a point. He had never been a dispatcher, but he had watched the tragedy play out on the news plenty of times.
You have any weapons?
I carry bear spray in my purse.
Better move it to your coat pocket. It will be easier to grab. What about martial arts?
She shook her head and finally shrugged off her coat.
Maybe I should take shooting lessons.
I'll teach you. Jiu-jitsu, I mean. I could teach you to shoot as well. But from what I've heard of Waterman, he's more likely to jump you in the shadows. You wouldn't have time to draw a gun or hit him with bear spray.
Close contact defensive moves could save you.
And he's a whiz with a gun. He was a sniper in the Marines, and he sells Glocks. Those stunning blue eyes studied him a few moments before she nodded.
Okay, where do you train?
I have a small setup at the cabins. I teach lessons on Monday nights at 7.
She shuddered. If I showed up, everyone would know why I'm there. I bet half the town knows Garrett is here by now.
That's a good thing. The more people who know, the faster we find him.
When do you start work?
Next Monday. I've got another week of nesting at the house and unpacking stuff. The moving truck arrived this morning, and boxes are crammed everywhere upstairs.
What hours do you work?
She cut another piece of squeaky cheese. I go in at 6 and get off at 3.
Let's train in the afternoons then, like at 4.
What about your business? Won't you be taking people out on excursions?
I'm usually back by 3. We can at least get started with some defensive moves.
He watched her nibble on the cheese. Why was he so determined to teach her? She wasn't even his type, if he had had a type once upon a time.
Esther was tall and blonde, with a kittenish manner he had found attractive when they'd met. She would have crumbled at the thought of learning to defend herself. Dana's determination to save herself from Waterman was much more attractive to him now than some clinging violet who had taken one look at his scarred face and run for the door. Literally.
Careful. He shook off the internal warning. This was a friendly gesture, nothing more.
He was immune to beautiful women.
You look like you just bit into tinfoil, Dana said. What's wrong?
He shrugged away the memory of his faithless fiancée. Just thinking about what I should teach you first.
He pushed a plate of panikaku toward her.
Eat up. You'll need your strength. That was a close call. Garrett parked the truck in the lean-to and got out. His face was still wind-burned from his run through the woods. He shouldn't have been stalking Dana with people around. Had the woman caught a glimpse of his face?
The cold stung his cheeks as he got out of his truck, but the cabin he'd holed up in would soon warm. The wind had scoured most of the snow from the path he was on, but he was ready to sit and rest. Ever since he'd hit Rock Harbor, he'd been in a state of high alert, and he needed a sanctuary, a place to gather his strength and plan his next move. He unlocked the padlock he'd put on the door and stepped inside. Though it was still cold, at least the wind wasn't stinging his skin. He threw the new deadbolt he'd installed, then went to his cooler to pull out a bottle of beer. He popped the top and took a swig, then put it on top of the cooler and unzipped his coat before starting the propane heater in the corner. The place was just one room with a bare wood floor, no real kitchen or bathroom, and holes in the log chinks that let in the wind. But it was well off the road, and he didn't think anyone had been here in years. There was even a back door for a quick getaway if someone came to the front. He'd hauled in a sleeping bag and a cooler of food, but it was far from comfortable. He reached up to unwind his scarf, then froze. It wasn't there. He rushed for the door and unlocked it, then stepped out to the slanting porch and looked over the frozen landscape. No sign of the bright blue and black scarf. Had he worn it today? He thought back to his movements. Yes. It had definitely protected him from the wind when he was in the woods. Maybe he'd snagged it on a tree branch in his run to escape after hitting the woman. What if someone found it? His DNA would be all over it. He took a deep breath and forced himself to calm down. Even if they found it, as long as she hadn't seen him, he would be safe. His name wasn't on it. And it hadn't even been purchased from a store. Dana had made it, so it was unlikely it could be traced to him. In a place like Rock Harbor, many people wore handmade scarves. His was hardly unique. He reached for his beer and took another swig, relishing the way the alcohol warmed his insides. If the woman died, the law would look long and hard for her killer. He hadn't even meant to hurt her. She had startled him, and he was just trying to escape. If she died, the fault would lie with Dana. He wouldn't even be here if not for her stupidity. He grinned at the thought of her frightened face when she'd seen him drive by. He should try to get it back before the scarf was found, just in case. Though he dreaded the thought of going back out into that wind, he pulled on his coat and went to the door. Garrett eyed the sky. He only had about an hour before it would be too dark to find anything. He'd have to take his truck at least part of the way, though he'd better try to keep it hidden. He went to the small shed where he had stashed his vehicle and shoved open the door. His breath steamed in the air as he turned the key. The engine stuttered twice, then caught. He pumped the gas pedal until the engine purred, then turned on the defroster. When the windshield didn't clear after the temperature gauge registered warm, he yanked off a glove and held his hand over the vent. Cold air. He swore and banged his fist on the dash. He had bought it after flying to Houghton, but it was a stupid piece of trash. He dug in the glove box for a napkin, then wiped the windshield, but it immediately fogged back up. There was no way he'd be able to drive without the defroster working, not in this weather. Frustration built in his chest, and he gritted his teeth before he turned off the engine and climbed out. He had no choice but to hoof it through the forest, back to the waterfall, and see if he could find his scarf. When he got back, he'd work on the truck. Otherwise, he'd be stuck here with no transportation. He probably shouldn't have been watching Dana with other people around. The wind picked up as he set off through the trees, and he flipped up his coat hood. It would take him half an hour to hike there. He didn't like how he was leaving tracks, either. If someone found his scarf, it could lead them directly to his cabin. He bit down on his lips so hard he tasted blood. He should have gone along the road like he did the first time. They couldn't track him then. Maybe he should turn around. Here he was, sleeping in a filthy old cabin that let in the snow and wind and living off cold meat sandwiches and stale chips. But not for long. He had to leave for a few days for work. When he got back, he'd grab Dana, and they'd go far away from here to somewhere warm. Somewhere with white beaches and turquoise water. Maybe Kauai. The pleasant thought urged him on and kept him warm for the next few minutes until he crested the hill and made the turn toward the waterfall. It was getting dark, and finding his scarf was beginning to look more and more impossible. He stopped to tie a shoe and heard voices. Garrett ducked behind a tree and watched flashlights bobbing among the trees. Even if they weren't looking for him, this was a lost cause. He turned and plunged in another direction that would take him to the road. Chapter 10. Dana couldn't believe she was actually going to do this. She'd unpacked a few boxes before coming here and should have worked all day, but the thought of being with Boone had been irresistible. Boone's martial arts cabin sat at the end of a row of cabins with a sign designating it. A sign read, "Come in," so she opened the door and stepped into a room about 20 by 30. A padded mat covered most of the floor, and rings and punching bags hung from the ceiling along the opposite wall. That typical gym smell immediately took her back to volleyball practice when she was in high school. Boone kicked a heavy bag with grim determination. The beads of perspiration on his square face only added to his attractiveness. She shouldn't be here. She didn't want to feel that almost irresistible pull toward him. He had hurt her, just like Garrett had, or he'd leave her like her parents did. Love wasn't safe. Hadn't she learned that already? Watching his fluid motions was hypnotic. Did he think about his scars all the time? Maybe he didn't realize a woman didn't notice them after the first shock. His caring manner and strong personality would attract any woman in his circle. The muscles in his thighs flexed as he kicked the bag. As he twisted in the kick, his expression lost its focus, and he stopped to grab a towel to mop his brow. "You're early. It's only 2.
I haven't started work yet and thought I'd come on out."
"I had a bet with Allison that you wouldn't show."
"What did you wager?"
"My favorite Arizona Cardinals sweatshirt."
He shook his head.
"I was sure you'd show up, but she was positive you wouldn't. I could see how determined you are to start a new life without being afraid of your ex."
"You nearly lost." She took off her boots and coat. What would he have thought if he'd seen her pacing her bedroom this morning trying to decide on sweatpants or jeans? She put on jeans and a sweatshirt at first, before she forced herself to change into sweats. When she'd told Chris on the phone what she was planning, he tried to talk her out of it. It hadn't taken long to remember how often she felt inadequate in her big brother's shadow. He'd always make her think she needed a man to take care of her. But she was through with that kind of needy attitude. If she didn't make a change now, she'd be forever stuck in making the wrong choices every time. She didn't want to feel needy, and she sure didn't want another man in her life. Boone motioned to her to join him on the mat.
"I've been thinking about what I want to teach you. Rather than pick a specific martial art like karate or taekwondo, I think we'll focus on defensive moves. I also want to show you how to kick so you can get your leg muscles as strong as possible. Most women have better lower body strength, and you can do some damage that way with a little bit of knowledge."
"Okay. What kind of defensive moves? I sit at a desk all day, and my arms are about as strong as cooked noodles."
She should be ashamed of how she'd sat on her duff in Washington and hadn't darkened the door of a gym in years. Little by little, Garrett had isolated her and kept her from doing the things she used to find important. Like a frog in slow-boiling water, he gradually changed her. She didn't recognize the person staring back at her in the mirror most mornings, but she wanted to find herself again. Maybe someday she'd be like Bree, calm and self-assured. She could dream anyway. She practiced a calm, confident smile.
Let's do this.
He stared at her. Let's take the mask off, okay? You're not nearly as confident as you like people to think, and it's all right.
The blood from her head rushed south.
I don't know what you mean.
Sure you do. Right now, you want nothing more than to turn around and run. You're out of your element, so you're hiding behind that smile. You'd hate for someone to think you couldn't handle anything life throws at you.
Her smile faltered and died on her lips. How'd he know that? She inhaled and squared her shoulders.
Let's do this. What's your plan?
To start with, I want to teach you how to stand for best stability and strength. He positioned her in front of the punching bag. Stand with your feet staggered and facing forward, not angling off to either side. Your knees should be slightly bent and fluid.